Lockheed Martin consolidates 5 more flight service stations. The Pentagon kills the Bell Armed Reconnaissance Helicopter Project. And American Airlines pilots lose their immunity program for safety reports. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, October 20th, 2008. Lockheed Martin has announced it will close 5 satellite flight service stations early in February. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association is not amused. 3 complaint-filled years after the company's takeover of the FSS network from the FAA, Lockheed says improvements in its network and a decline in general aviation activity are allowing further consolidation. The facilities to be closed will be Oakland, San Diego, Denver, Albuquerque, and Macon, Georgia. The company says it has specialists in remaining hubs who are familiar with the weather and local conditions of the regions being consolidated, so the quality of service to pilots will not be impacted. This assertion has eyebrows raised at AOPA, which was not consulted about the change. Outgoing AOPA President Phil Boyer says, quote, "Anytime there is a major change in the system, the users should be consulted first, whether it be a VOR decommissioning, TRACON consolidation, or changes to airspace. With no advance notice, we can certainly understand why some of our members will be incensed at this news," unquote. Most of the calls coming into FSS are already being routed to one of 3 hubs in Ashburn, Virginia, Fort Worth, Texas, or Prescott, Arizona. Boyer says AOPA will watch the situation closely. Quote, "If there is any degradation of service, we'll raise all kinds of trouble, even if we have to go back to Congress," unquote. On Thursday last week, the Defense Department notified Congress and contractor Bell Helicopter that it's calling off the development of Bell's U.S. Army Armed Reconnaissance Helicopter. John Young, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, in consultation with senior defense and Army officials, determined that the fundamental cost and schedule basis underlying the award of the ARH contract is no longer valid. In other words, cost overruns and program delays have grown too big for even the Pentagon. The contract was awarded to Bell in 2005 and was supposed to provide the Army with a replacement for the OH-58 Kiowa. The new machine was based on the existing Bell 407. Development was supposed to cost $359 million, but latest estimates now place it at $942 million, well over double the contract amount. Procurement cost estimates ballooned from $8.5 million per machine to about $14.5 million. Instead of receiving the ARH starting next year, first deliveries are now estimated for 2013. Young summarized, quote, "Rather than continue this program, I have decided that the best course of action is to provide the Army with an opportunity to define a coherent, disciplined Kiowa Warrior helicopter replacement program and to obtain more rigorous contract terms for its development," unquote. Bell had yet to comment as of our deadline. Squabbling between American Airlines and its pilots union has killed a program which was once lauded as a major step forward in safety. The Aviation Safety Action Partnership, or ASAP, was a joint effort among the airline, the pilots, and the FAA. It provided immunity from airline discipline and even FAA enforcement to pilots who came forward with reports of safety-related incidents, even if the pilot was at fault. But early this year, the Allied Pilots Association accused the airline of reneging on the deal and punishing pilots who'd filed reports. The airline countered that the immunity doesn't apply in cases in which a third party, such as a ramp worker, has also reported an incident. The end result of the dispute is the official end of the program after 14 years. American pilot Billy Nolan termed the loss of ASAP sad and incomprehensible. The airline said, quote, "The APA's willingness to discard a 14-year program that has done so much for our pilots, our airline, and our industry is impossible to understand," unquote. It's official. Defense Secretary Robert Gates swore in Acting Air Force Secretary Michael Donnelly as the 22nd Secretary of the Air Force during a ceremony held at the Air Force Memorial in Washington on Friday. Donnelly has served in the acting role since June 21st. He was confirmed by the Senate October 2nd. Gates, who is a former Air Force intelligence officer, saluted Donnelly as the right choice to lead today's airmen. Quote, "Mike brings decades of experience in the military, the government, and the private sector to this post," unquote. Up next on ANN, Boeing tries to head off another strike in December. The FAA has a new website for lessons learned. And runway status lights will come to 22 more U.S. airports. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC 700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply Canal tips, composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 20th. I'm Paul Platt. Representatives of the Society of Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace say a meeting with Boeing Thursday was at times heated and confrontational, but productive. Quote, "No major issues were decided. However, the exchange gives some hope Boeing will begin working on major union issues, including medical benefits, outsourcing, providing a meaningful cost of living adjustment, and stopping efforts to cut employee groups from SPIA contracts," unquote. The union's contract with Boeing expires December 1st. The current strike by another union, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, is now 6 weeks old, producing more pressure on the company to avoid a second strike. Formal talks between Boeing and SPIA are scheduled to begin October 28th. The FAA has established a one-of-a-kind online safety library that teaches lessons learned from some of the world's most historically significant transport airline accidents and how that knowledge can help maintain today's aviation safety record. Regarding the fact that some of the accidents date back almost a half century, the agency says, quote, "The FAA believes many of the lessons learned from these tragedies are timeless and are relevant to today's aviation community. The Lessons Learned Library lists 11 major airplane accidents that made an impact on the way the aviation industry and the FAA conduct business today. The FAA's goal is to stock the library with 40 more historically significant accidents by the end of 2009, unquote. You'll find the Lessons Learned website linked from an easy-to-find tab on the start page at www.faa.gov. The FAA has awarded a contract to Sensis Corporation of Syracuse, New York, to install runway status lights at 22 major U.S. airports. Those lights are designed to improve runway safety by warning pilots when it's unsafe to cross or enter a runway. Acting FAA Administrator Robert Sturgill explained, quote, "These lights are designed with the pilot in mind. It's a big step for safety on the runway. We're expecting to see positive results right from the start," unquote. The initial award is a 3-year contract valued at $131 million. 2 1-year options could bring the contract total to $215 million. Sensis Corporation is responsible for developing the software, testing, and installing the lights. When runway status light prototypes at Dallas-Fort Worth and San Diego International Airports proved effective in helping avoid incursions, the FAA decided to install the lights at other airports where Airport Surface Detection Equipment Model X systems are being installed. The status lights are triggered by ASDEX surveillance data. You can find the list of airports to be included in the program in the text version of this story, released on Saturday at aero-news.net. United Airlines announced on Thursday that 322 employees, represented by the International Association of Machinists, had taken advantage of the early out and voluntary furlough programs agreed to by the company and the union. Capacity cuts announced by United in July were expected to result in 7,000 fewer positions at the airline. Since that announcement, United has worked with its unions to explore viable alternatives to involuntary layoffs. More than 1,500 members of the Association of Flight Attendants took voluntary furloughs. That completely eliminated the need for any involuntary layoffs among flight attendants. Roughly 200 pilots and 100 mechanics have now done the same. The programs have so far reduced the number of involuntary furloughs among IAM employees by almost 40%, according to the airline. Eligible participants get severance payments, travel benefits, and other incentives. Still ahead, NASA struggles to resuscitate the Hubble telescope. Barrington Irving test flies an airplane built by students. And the state of Florida has one of its King Airs for sale. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, October 20th. I'm Paul Plack. NASA's attempt over the weekend to awaken backup systems, which have been sleeping for 18 years aboard the Hubble Space Telescope, didn't go so well. It's not clear yet when the Hubble will be back online. On September 27th, the main system used to send data and images back to Earth quit working. The failure resulted in a delay to the launch of the shuttle Atlantis, scheduled this month for an unrelated repair mission, to make time for testing of replacement parts and further crew training. That launch is pushed back now into next year. NASA's attempt to channel science instruments through a backup computer encountered problems with a computer and a low-voltage power supply. The Associated Press reports the soonest Hubble could be operating fully again is late this week. Art Whipple, a Hubble manager, said at worst the observatory might remain inactive until astronauts arrive with replacement parts. But he told reporters on Friday, quote, "We're still optimistic," unquote. 60 high school students participating in Aviator Barrington Irving's Build and Soar program got a special thrill last week when the plane they assembled was successfully test flown by Irving himself on Wednesday. Just before takeoff at Miami's Opa-locka Airport, Irving told the crowd, quote, "I'm not nervous about flying this aircraft because I believe in our students. I'm about to do something monumental," unquote. Miami's CBS 4 TV reports that after buckling in and starting the engine, Irving headed skyward, but returned to the runway almost immediately because the canopy had come loose. The second try reportedly went perfectly, as Irving climbed to 1,000 feet and cruised for a bit before performing a series of turns. Upon his return, he was greeted by a group of ecstatic students. Irving said, quote, "I feel good. I'm shaking, but these kids did a really great job. They built a solid airplane. I feel like a father," unquote. The plane is a Zodiac 601 XL. That's a two-seat kit plane manufactured by Zenith Aircraft Company of Mexico, Missouri. In honoring Irving's record-setting Columbia 400, which was called Inspiration, the XL was dubbed Inspiration 2 by the students. Build and Soar is a 10-week summer program offered by Irving's nonprofit Experience Aviation Incorporated in collaboration with the George T. Baker Aviation School. Students were given a hands-on opportunity for learning by building the plane and participating in related projects. Last year, Irving flew a 30,000-mile world tour to inspire inner-city youth to aspire to greater things. He set records as the youngest pilot and the first person of African descent to circumnavigate the globe solo by air. Unlike Alaska Governor and Republican VP nominee Sarah Palin, Florida Governor Charlie Crist plans to keep his jet, but he's selling a King Air to save some money. Since 1972, the state of Florida has maintained an executive aircraft pool, which currently consists of a 2003 Cessna Citation Bravo, a 1999 Beechcraft King Air 350, and a 1985 Beechcraft King Air 300. The pool provides on-demand executive air transport for the governor, cabinet officers, and other high-level officials and employees on a priority first-call, first-served basis. A 2008 audit suggested there were less expensive ways to get that done. The Associated Press reports Governor Crist elected to keep the Citation and the King Air 350 while selling off the older King Air 300. That's the oldest of the three aircraft. It's listed on both tradeaplane.com and www.aso.com. The Department of Management Services estimates its value at just under $2 million. Auditors noted that the 300 is now 23 years old and was unavailable due to unscheduled maintenance for 74 days during the last 2 years. And finally, with its Rolls-Royce Merlin engine and beautiful elliptical wings, the Supermarine Spitfire is both a design icon and a piece of British history. On Friday, the number of airworthy two-place Spitfires jumped 25%, when test pilot Jonathan Whaley strapped into SM-520 and took it aloft for a 15-minute flight from Thruxton Airfield in Hampshire, England. The aircraft was built as a single-seat fighter for the Royal Air Force in 1944. After World War II, it was sold to the South African Air Force. It was discovered in a Cape Town scrapyard in the 1970s and acquired by the late Charles Church and brought home to the UK. Church began to restore the plane, but when he died in 1989, the aircraft was sold to Alan Dunkerley, who in turn resold it to Paul Portelli in June of 2002. The restoration has now been completed by Classic Aero Engineering at Thruxton. Gloucester-based Retro Track and Air has overhauled the mighty Merlin engine, and German company Hoffmann provided the huge four-bladed propeller. During restoration, the decision was made to convert the aircraft into its rare two-seat configuration, using original blueprints for the type. Now, SM-520's adventure continues. Sadly, Portelli passed away before he could see his beloved Spitfire fly, so it will be sold with a full UK Civil Aviation Authority permit to fly. Offers in excess of £2 million, or about $3.5 million US, are being sought. I know. It's an awful time to be trying to apply for a loan. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today I'll talk with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about the level of instrument proficiency we really need when mishaps suddenly spike pilot workload. Also, how big an advantage is provided by glass cockpits over steam gauges in those situations? And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.